Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Today is Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. Welcome to ATI Financial Radio. It is a no-nonsense approach to personal investing. My name is Dina Isola. I'm joined tonight by Tony Isola, and we have a very exciting episode this evening. We're happy to be back. It's been quite a while since we've had a broadcast, and we're excited to be back and to launch a new format that we think is going to really help everyone out. Tonight's topic is digging deeper into your financial plan, and we're going to explore all the different things that you can focus on that is productive to changing your financial outcome as opposed to the things that most of us get caught up in, which is simply nothing more than distraction and really doesn't benefit you. So the way we're going to do this is every week we're going to highlight Tony's blog, maliceforall.com, is his blog. It's justice for the individual investor. We're going to cover a segment from that. Then we're going to do a little bit about something in the news, whether it's news that we have or things that are in the local news. A consumer tip of the week, Kids Corner, which is going to cover a tip relating to children and money. And then our weekly topic, which I already mentioned, is digging deeper into your financial plan. So we're going to get started with Tony's blog this week, which was really interesting. It was about annuities. It was Mr. Insurance Man, tear down that wall. Tony, you want to elaborate?
Yeah, well, what I try to do is every week write a couple of articles, and they always appear on maliceforall.com, which is my blog site. But you can see them in various other places. Some people have picked them up. And I'm trying to write more for a company called NerdWallet.com, which is a great personal finance site, which you can go on and pretty much get in plain English a lot of information dealing with your finances. You could ask advisors things, read articles. So it was on my blog and NerdWallet.com. And basically it was about what happens is, sometimes you will buy an investment, and it's very easy to get in and very difficult to get out. And that's usually a bad sign when there are surrender fees and other charges attached to an investment product, because what's happening is the company's anticipating you wanting to leave once you find out that there might be some better alternatives. Also, it has to compensate the salesperson who sold you this product. So the investment company will pay them a commission up front, and then if you try to leave, they'll get their money back by charging you an exit fee, so to speak. And, you know, in the blog, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I try to write things in a different way. You know, basically in that blog, you'll hear about Ronald Reagan and the Eagles and variable annuities. So those probably are three things that aren't, you know, thrown together too much, you know, which doesn't belong and why. But
and John F. Kennedy and the Berlin Wall.
John F. Kennedy and the Berlin Wall. But the whole idea was that, you know, these investments are almost like the Berlin Wall because you're trapped in and it's very difficult and dangerous to escape. And it's done by some sort of oppressive organization. So basically, you know, if you read the article, it's somewhat entertaining, and you'll also get a good idea of why it's a bad idea to buy any investment in which there are large surrender charges to exit.
And not all annuities carry these large surrender charges. So if an annuity is appropriate for you, and I stress that it being appropriate because it's really designed for people who have maxed out different ways of sheltering their investments from taxes. So if you're not in that position, that's a red flag right there if you own an annuity, because right, chances are you don't need to own one. And if you own it in your IRA or your 401k or your 403b, which is already tax-deferred, that's kind of another red flag that you've been sold it. So just be aware of that. The costs involved are really important, and there are good options out there, but they're not readily found.
Right. And you know, many investment products, it depends how you use them. You know, it's kind of like a knife. You could, you know, carve a pumpkin or you could stab somebody. So there are positive ways and there are negative ways. So make sure you understand how to use the knife before you start carving things.
There you go. I like that. Good advice.
Yeah.
The news of the week is actually some news that we have to share. Tomorrow evening, that would be Wednesday, April 1st, we are really excited to be putting out an educational seminar at the Holiday Inn Express in Stony Brook on 347 at 5:30 in the evening, and it's called Charitable Giving in 2015. And we're going to explore the different ways that people can contribute to charities and benefit themselves by A, doing good, obviously, and B, helping themselves out from a tax perspective. And there's different ways of handling donating to charities. We're going to have more about this next week. What we're going to do is whenever we do a seminar, if people can attend, they'll be able to tune into our Blog Talk Radio and hear about it. So we'll go into greater detail next week, but it's certainly going to be an interesting evening. We have Stony Brook Children's Hospital and Make-A-Wish Suffolk County and Lift Up Long Island, all charities that we were fortunate enough to be involved with last year and seen their good work up close. So we're hoping that if you're available and you're in the area and you'd like to join us, please stop by. Again, it starts at 5:30 at the Holiday Inn Express in Stony Brook. Did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I just think, again, it's a tremendous opportunity to have a financial gain for yourself by doing good for others. And it just makes it more efficient by being able to make one large contribution and maybe worry about who you're going to give the money to afterwards, because sometimes people just need, they might need a tax write-off, but they don't want to just throw the money out the window. So you can get the benefits of both. You can actually, you know, get a tax write-off by donating to the fund, and then you can take your time in dispersing the funds to make sure that the money will be maximized. And, you know, I also, in the presentation, I'm also going to talk about something which is from a book called Happy Money, and it talks about how money can make you happy, but it depends what you do with the money. And one of the biggest ways that money can bring happiness to your life is investing in others and giving to charity. The authors of this book did studies all over the world with all kinds of different, you know, socioeconomic groups, and the one conclusion was it really didn't matter how much you gave or where you lived or how much money you made, but it made people feel better than spending the money on themselves. So not only will donating to a charity who's doing great work help society, but it will also help your finances, but more importantly, it will also help your happiness, which is what money is there for in the end. So, you know, there's a lot going on with that, with the ideas, especially psychology and money, and this really relates to it.
And, you know, a lot of times people will say, you know, money is the root of all evil.
No,
and
it's not true.
You know, when it's in good hands, and it's being channeled to do good things, it's pretty remarkable. So it's a matter of changing your perspective.
I mean, there's a reason, you know, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are basically leaving 99% of their money to charities, because it's also, not only do they feel they're doing good, but it's making them feel good. So, you know, there's and you don't have to be Warren Buffett or Bill Gates to help out a charity and just, you know, They basically say, too, if you give money away, it also makes you feel like you have enough money. So it's kind of like a reverse way of thinking. When you give money away, it makes you feel like, okay, I'm okay because I can afford to give money away.
Right.
So hoarding money is really not good for anyone, especially yourself.
Good point. There's something to be said for thinking in terms of abundance. So.
Right.
Okay, moving on, we've got the consumer tip of the week, and it's a pretty straightforward one. I hope most of you are aware of this, but perhaps, you know, it being right, we're right on the cusp of April, maybe you've lost sight of where we are in the year, but April 15th is almost upon us. I know everyone's probably thinking, oh gosh, taxes are due, but there's another deadline that comes with April 15th, and that is you are eligible to make an IRA contribution for the previous year, so for 2014, all the way up until April 15th of 2015. So if you have not made an IRA contribution yet for 2014, We strongly suggest that you fund either an IRA or a Roth IRA, depending upon your individual situation, because it's a great way to save for your retirement, to have the funds grow tax-deferred, and there can be some other benefits. Tony, you want to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is, you know, when you could get a – there are very few things in finance where you get triple or quadruple benefits from, and one of the things about an IRA and funding them, if you qualify, is you possibly can get an immediate tax write-off, which would lower your taxes, and on the flip side, you're also increasing your wealth because now your money is growing at a you know, hopefully halfway decent rate over time. So that double benefit is pretty amazing, you know, in the big picture, if you can get into that habit. And don't be afraid. You know, many people will say, well, I contribute at work. I'm in a 401k plan or 403b, so I'm not eligible to put into a Roth IRA or a regular IRA and get a tax deduction or qualify for a Roth IRA, which means the money will not be taxed when you take it out. That is not true. So you need to speak to your accountant, and you should be doing that sooner rather than later because April 15th is coming up, and see what you qualify for. And it could make a difference possibly in you getting a tax refund, you know, next year or having to pay taxes, but also growing your retirement funds. So it really is a no-brainer if you have the funds and you're wondering, you know, what to do and how to save. Looking at tax-deferred accounts is always a very, very good option.
And the contribution limits for the year are $5,500 for investors under the age of 50, and if you're over 50, you can contribute up to $6,500 with the catch-up provision. So make sure you get on that if you haven't done it already. And that also would mean that you could potentially make two contributions within the year. You could. That's why we say, hey, if you haven't funded 2014, do that first. Do that before April 15th, because if you end up with some extra money over the course of 2015, you can then contribute to your 2015 IRA.
Right. And also, even if you're going to do it for 2015, you know, for year now, you know, this year, some people say, well, I'll put in, you know, $300, $400 a month or whatever it is. You know, you're better off if you have the money to just put it all in. If it's money that's going to be there for a decent period of time, many studies have shown making that lump sum contribution, markets go up and down, that's the way it is, but over the long term, the earlier you get it in, the more you will make. So I would suggest if you're going to make the contribution, just make it, put it all in, and go about your life.
Okay, now next up, Kids Corner, and we're going to piggyback off what we were just speaking about, which is IRAs. Believe it or not, if your children are earning money, and that they could be young, they could be still in high school or middle school, they may be eligible for a Roth IRA for a minor.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one thing about that, though. The child has to have some sort of income. It doesn't have to be a lot of income. If they make $500, you can contribute $500 to a Roth IRA, which could have amazing results over a period of, you know, 50 or 60 years, depending how old the child is. So, you know, most people have to understand that before they would go about setting up such an account. But what you also have to understand is you can make the contribution for the child. So even though the child makes the $1,000 over the summer, they don't have to use their own money. You can set up the account and you can contribute the money for the child. It just has to show on his W-2 form that they made a certain amount of money during the year to cover that contribution. It also could benefit a business owner. If you hire a son or a daughter, you can pay them a salary and then make that contribution to a Roth IRA, which would not only help your child, but it could possibly help your business with some certain deductions. You know, again, I would speak to an accountant to make sure you're doing it properly and know all the options that you have, but it's another no-brainer if you can do it. And most importantly, it could not only will you be investing for the future and have decades of compound interest ahead, but you can start at a very early age a saving and investing habit with the child that would actually pay the most dividends over time. So this is a great option. You know, they're very easy to set up. You could have unlimited investment choices, and you could actually teach a child or young adult how to invest with smaller amounts of money. So when they get older, they'll be more prepared.
And get them into good habits, really, right. Most importantly. Mm-hmm. So, all righty.
Yeah. And two, with the matching. If you match it, you're automatic, you know, someone would have to be a fool if someone said, you know, if you make $1,000, I'll contribute $1,000. Immediately, you just made 100% on your money, and that would be a very foolish deal to turn down, but it would kind of show them, you know, you're not going to make 100% of your money all the time, but the whole point is you're investing money so it will grow. That's the lesson that could be conveyed, and you can give the incentive by having that matching plan.
Okay. So moving on to our weekly topic. We actually did this seminar about a week and a half ago, and I thought it was really informative and well-received. It's called Digging Deeper into Your Financial Plan. And we see a lot of people come in with no plan, or they've been investing, but they don't understand what they've been doing, and they're very concerned about what they're putting their money into and when they're taking it out and all these things. They're worried about what the market's going to do and who the president of the United States, next president's going to be, and all these things that really kind of get them all worked up but really don't get them going anywhere. So we wanted to put together something that would help people navigate all the distractions, learn what to tune out, and most importantly, control what you can control, because I think that always makes people feel better to have a degree of control.
Yeah, it's very important to look at the big picture. And when I say the big picture, you could think of a pie chart, and maybe you have your investments, and everybody seems to think, well, that's really what I should focus on is, you know, how are my investments doing, and what did they do last week or last year, and what funds should I buy, and what sector should I invest in, or what stock should I buy? And that, to be quite honest, is just a huge, huge waste of your time. It's being very, you're not being constructive. You're basing your emotions and your plans on random events that could happen along the way, and you're reacting to them based on your emotions rather than your logic. So when you create a plan, you really don't worry about that stuff too much. You kind of set up the asset allocation, which, you know, is detailed and difficult to construct, but once it's there for the long term. And now you could shift your energy onto things you can control, things like a budget, things like your taxes and how your investments are allocated, so you set yourself up for a lower tax bill. How do I take Social Security? What kind of debt should I have? Should I pay it off or shouldn't I? What kind of cash reserve should I have so I won't have to go into debt into the future? How long am I going to work? How much money will I need when I retire? How will I get to the point to save enough money? And again, all of those points that I just made are things that you can relatively control. You can't control them 100%, but you have a lot more control over those events than you do over what the market is going to do on a daily or monthly or yearly basis. But unfortunately, that's where most people spend their energy. And you just have to deal, you know, when these plans, many times we project things 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in the future. To be honest, these are just educated guesses, and that's how you have to look at it. These plans have to be monitored and adjusted every year, and as you get closer to those retirement dates, there is some more certainty. So you're just dealing with probabilities, and you have to understand the difference between probabilities and possibilities, because something can be possible but not probable, and you really need to understand the difference in that when you create this plan. You know, for instance, you can have a plan that says, I'm going to win the lottery, and that will finance my retirement. Is it possible? Yes. Is it probable? No. So that plan should never be implemented. the types of plans that we can implement and others that are CFPs and people of that nature will have higher degrees of probability. In other words, you have a better chance of success. But no one, and if anyone does this to you and says, well, you have 100% chance of, you know, having a great retirement. Nothing's 100%. All you can do is try to deal with things which you have some control over, create your plan, and monitor it. And it's a start. But unfortunately, most people won't even start until it's too late. And they'll realize all the wasted opportunity they had, and there's no substitute for replacing time. So just in the big picture, creating these plans changes your way of thinking towards things. And, you know, all the market noise and current events and all that stuff that tends to freak people out, you'll learn to ignore and focus on the big picture to get you where you're going to go. And if nothing else, that's probably the greatest benefit of creating a plan, is just changing your mindset towards money.
One of the biggest problems I think we see is that a lot of people don't have a plan. They may have a basket of investments that they come to us with, and they say, did we buy the right thing, and should we be doing something differently? Again, focusing on the actual holdings and not looking at things that, like, what is your goal? Starting as basic as that, when do you think you're going to retire? What's your time horizon? Okay, from there, how much money do you think you'll need, which is easily looked at because you could look at your budget and you could see how much you're spending. And a good rule is trying to capture about 85% of your income in retirement so that you can live off of that and not really compromise your standard of living too much. So based on that, you kind of have a good sense of what you're going to need every month or every year. And then you get to back out what Social Security might be, what your pension, if you have a pension, might be, what your investments are going to provide. And then you can start to see where the gaps exist. But unless you look at your time horizon and nail down what you need, if you haven't answered those two questions, anything you're doing is just kind of filling a basket with investments, but they're not necessarily the right ones to get you there, and you're overlooking so many other features, such as whether or not they're tax efficient, whether or not, you know, they're in the right accounts for you, and whether or not they're designed to get you where you're going, and most importantly, whether or not you're simply saving enough.
Yeah, and again, there's a lot of other things, a lot of what-if scenarios. You know, things tend to happen in life that are unexpected, so creating a margin of error in the plan is also a good idea. Most people don't realize that once you retire, the average person spends over $200,000 on medical costs from 65 until their death. So, you know, if you're a person that says, well, I've got $250,000 saved and I'm going to retire, well, basically that'll cover your medical costs. That's it. So you need to know these things. If you don't know these things, you can't make good decisions. You know, when to take Social Security. By taking your Social Security at, say, the age of 62, the earliest you can take it, you are sacrificing almost 65% lower payout each month than, say, taking it at 70. Because in Social Security, there's an 8% increase each year you don't take it. So 62 to 70 is a huge jump in income. And again, if maybe some people, if they knew that, they would work a little longer and have a much, actually save more and have a much bigger Social Security check each month. Even the simple fact of waiting till 66, that's 32% higher paycheck basically every month for the rest of your life that's adjusted to inflation. Most people, you know, again, when they don't speak to certified, you know, planners and people that have the background to help them in this field will have just really wrong thoughts about things. You know, the average person, you ask them, well, I better take my Social Security, you know, now because there won't be any money when I retire. You know, these are just not factually correct, and they're scare tactics. And if you kind of, again, base your financial decisions on your emotions there's a good probability that you will have a huge shortfall in your retirement. So you have to think there are many, many different moving pieces, and someone has to coordinate those pieces so they all work together to maximize your income, savings, investing potential. And that's what a plan does. And to be completely honest, if you work with somebody that manages your money and the only discussions are about what stock to buy, you know, what mutual fund to buy, you know, what did great last year so we can buy it this year, you know, these are the wrong conversations. These are not going to get you to reach your goal. The topics that you're covering, again, are not going to be helpful to your end goal of coordinating all these different parts of your finances. So, you know, if nothing else, you need to understand that you have to have a holistic conversation about your money, or else it's really going to be a detriment to the amount of money that you accumulate and also the income that could be produced from it.
There have been times where people have come into us, they're not yet clients, and they want our opinion on things, and they want to be putting away more, but they don't think they have any more resources to put away. And a quick cursory look at their holdings tells a very dramatic story of basically them owning things that are very expensive. And when you own mutual funds that have a letter after them, an A, a B, a C, a D, right there, you're paying more than you need to, because there are lots and lots of options out there, very, very good quality, low-cost funds and ETFs out there. So a lot of times we'll say, hey, you know, if you just stop owning these expensive investments, that's your IRA contribution for the year.
And quite frankly, by owning these types of investments, in the end, you'll have 25-35% less in accumulated assets, which could mean for you several years more of having to work. So you have to make these decisions sooner rather than later. And by simply changing your investments and your tax strategy and focusing on low-cost, tax-efficient investment vehicles, you could literally increase your assets and cut down the amount of years you might have to work, because immediately you're instead of worrying about what the market's going to do, worry about the cost and taxes. You could literally add 3-4% to your investment returns by being efficient with cost and tax-wise with your investments. So that's something that really you really need to have a discussion with.
That is something we see a tremendous amount of, where clients, well, prospects, they're not clients yet, they come in and it turns out that they own, for example, bond funds in their taxable accounts,
right,
which is
treasury bonds.
Treasury bonds.
Bond.
Yeah, not municipal bonds. A municipal bond would be very appropriate for a taxable account. So keep that in mind, that, you know, you need to be cognizant of what investments go in what different types of accounts. We're actually approaching the 60-second mark. This has been a really jam-packed show. We hope that you walk away knowing, you know, keep your costs low. If you have an annuity, pay attention to what you're spending there. If you haven't made an IRA contribution yet for 2014, go ahead and do so. You have until April 15th. Never too young to start investing, so encourage those children and go dig deeper into your plan. If you look at your time horizon, your asset allocation, your costs and taxes, and know yourself, you'll right there will give you enough to dig into to change to better your position.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to all those things, you should look at making, you know, charitable giving a part of your plan, because not only will it help other people, but it will help you in ways that sometimes don't have to do with money and your happiness. And that's really what the whole deal is about, accumulating this money, because having a lot of money and not being happy is also not a very good plan. So you can have it.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, and if you want to join us tomorrow, April 1st, at the Holiday Inn Express at 5:30, we'd love to have you. Until next week, have a great one. Thanks for joining us.